Welcome to Swimming World Radio. I'm your host, Brent Rutemiller. Today we're talking with Olympic and Hall of Fame coach Paul Bergen, along with Katie Hopps coach Paul Yetter. Thank you, Coach Bergen and Coach Yetter, for joining us today.
No problem.
No problem. Glad to do it.
Let me start by giving a brief background on both of you for our listeners. Coach Bergen has brought out the best in elite swimmers for over 3.5 decades, spanning 2 countries, United States and Canada. He's a 4-time Olympic and World Championship coach who was once voted Canadian Coach of the Year and twice American Swim Coach of the Year. Coach Bergen's teams have won women's collegiate national championships while at the University of Texas, a USA Swimming National Team Championship while with the Nashville Aquatic Club, and multiple national titles in Etobicoke, Canada. All of these accomplishments began in the late 1970s. He has coached multiple Olympians and record holders throughout his career, going back to his early days with the Cincinnati Marlins, where he coached Dina Dierdorf and Jenny Kemp. While in Nashville, Tennessee, he coached a legendary and recent guest on our show, Tracy Calkins. In Canada, he coached Allison Higson, while at Etobicoke, and most recently, back in the States at Tualatin Hills, he coached Inky DeBruin. Collectively, his swimmers have set 21 world records, 24 American records, and 13 Canadian records. Coach Bergen stepped out of swim coaching in the 90s to work in the thoroughbred horse racing industry, a time that we want to talk a little bit about in our show today. During that period, Coach Bergen was inducted into the International Swimming Hall of Fame in 1988. Coach, that's quite a resume, and I apologize if I missed anything.
No, you got it pretty good. My wife sent that to you?
Well, it's all in the Swimming World Archives.
Oh, okay.
Now, Coach Yetter, that can be a pretty intimidating resume to follow. Well, let's talk a little bit about you. Coach Paul Yetter now coaches the North Baltimore Aquatic Club of Maryland and has already proven that he can step up into the big time. His swimmers have set 40 national age group records, over 100 Maryland state records, and his swimmers have been ranked number one in the national age group rankings over 50 times. Since 2003, Paul has been Katie Hopps' coach. For those who did not listen to our Swimming World Radio show earlier this week, Katie is a 2004 Olympic finalist, a 3-time gold medalist from the 2005 World Championships, and a 3-time gold and 2-time silver medalist from the 2006 Pan Pacific Championships. Katie has set and lowered the American record, the 200 IM, 3 times and has set 25 U.S. national age group records, most recently overtaking Tracy Calkins' last age group record in the books in the 400 IM. In 2005, Coach Yetter served as an assistant coach on USA's Montreal World Championship team, and in 2006, he served as an assistant on the USA Victorian Pan Pacific Championship team. 5 of his North Baltimore swimmers will represent the United States in 2007 at the World Championships, the World University Games, and the Pan American Games. That's very impressive for a young coach, wouldn't you say, Coach Bergen?
Yeah, it really is. I saw the potential of this guy over quite a number of years when I used to bring club teams to the Dynamo Swim Club in Atlanta Holiday Classic, and you could just see the amount of potential and ability Paul had with his swimmers, you know, 10, 12 years ago. So it was just going to be a matter of time, not if this young guy was going to really be able to bring kids to the top of international level.
Well, that's certainly become apparent. Let's just jump right in and talk a little bit about the fact that you both have coached what could arguably be the top 2 all-around swimmers in history, with Katie having that same potential as Tracy Calkins. What similarities do these 2 athletes share other than they both were coached by a man named Paul? Let's start with you, Coach Bergen.
Well, I had called Paul. Do you remember when I talked to you? Was that about the spring of last year?
Yeah, that was in early March.
I had noticed what a fantastic series of improvements that Katie was making, and I bothered to try to call Paul and see if, you know, there was time that I could sit down and just listen to what he was doing with his program, and a lot of the things that, you know, he was having Katie do, it kind of reminded me of the things that both myself and Ron Young had done with Tracy back in Nashville. So, you know, I was kind of pleased to see that, you know, another coach was taking a little different tack, but a lot of similarities in the training program.
And you that was an earlier conversation in March, I'm assuming.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that was at the beginning of March.
And at that time, Coach Yetter, how did you take, you know, some of the things that you talked about with him?
I was just excited to talk to Paul. I mean, I had gotten to know Paul, I guess, at those trips in Atlanta. And, you know, and whenever I got to see Coach Bergen at the meets, I was always excited. So it was nice to talk to him about stuff. And, you know, I got what I had hoped for, which is some advice. And, you know, I got to bounce some stuff off of Coach Bergen, and he offered some advice to me based off of the types of things that we were talking about with the training. And after we got through our championship meet that spring, it kind of clicked with me that some of the things that we were talking about were exactly what needed to change with the training to specifically for Katie, to help her, you know, take the next step and get to the next level where she's at right now.
Now, one of the things that came out in the conversation with Tracy and Katie were the similarities in the complicated sets that they were doing. And they both kind of took pride in that. And they felt that, you know, doing, you know, long 8,000 sets and 9,000 sets that were very complicated with descending intervals and multiple stroke integrations, they found that to really be challenging and actually motivated them to be engaged in that workout. Is that some similarities that you were referring to, Paul, Coach Paul Bergen?
Well, it was. It was just mainly my call was to try to pick Paul's mind on, you know, what he was doing. And a lot of times I think, you know, having put myself back in Paul's position, you find yourself without anybody to bounce, you know, your concerns or questions off of. And, you know, you think you have the right answer and you think you're going down the right path, but sometimes you know, it would be nice to hear somebody say, yeah, I think you're going down the right path. Just keep what you're doing. Maybe think about modifying this a little bit or adding a little here or subtracting a little there. It's just pretty reassuring to, you know, to be able to talk to somebody that's either going through or has gone through the same kinds of development with an athlete that you have. As far as the complicated sets and that, I can't speak for Katie, but Tracy, she was just so coachable, and I think if, you know, whether it was Joel Saganowitz, which coached Tracy 12 and under before he ever showed up in Nashville, or Don Talbot that followed me, or Ron Young that followed Don Talbot, or Randy Reese down at Florida with Tracy, she was just such a willing athlete to just do what she was asked to do without, you know, sitting and thinking about whether it was the right or the wrong thing at the time. And I think that's probably what helped her, you know, continue to improve from coach to coach and year to year.
And Coach Yetter, do you see that same thing in Katie Hoff?
Yeah, I do. You know, I think it's important to remember, you know, although Katie's made a lot of improvement with North Baltimore over the last, well, since 2003, you know, she's had a lot of success as a younger swimmer and has had a lot of different experiences. I know if I were to try to mention the names of all of her previous coaches, I'd fail, but she was with a guy named Jack Berry at Typhoon Aquatics before she came to North Baltimore, and, you know, he set her up pretty well for us, and, you know, we kind of, you know, helped her take the next step. But, you know, I think one of the things that I noticed when you talked with Tracy and Katie last week, Brent, was that Tracy seemed very excited and sort of proud of the fact that she was very versatile, as is Katie. You know, they both seem to really enjoy mixing it up and doing lots of different things. But I don't think that a lot of the things that Katie does is very complicated in that, you know, other than the fact that she does, you know, different strokes and she mixes it up. I think a lot of the things that we do tend to be pretty simple, straightforward types of things with our training.
Coach Bergen, you know, if you were to pull out one trait that you think all champions share in common, what would that be?
Oh, geez. Well, there's two things, I think. First of all, there's a commitment level that you can't avoid. You know, it's where talking stops and, you know, action begins, I guess. And the old country western song, a little more action, a little less talk. So I think, you know, for me it's been commitment. And then I think within each, you know, athlete as they're developing their careers, it's at home and it's, you know, it's, I think it starts at home with parents that, you know, while their child might say they might want to accomplish something, it doesn't matter whether it's in the arts or science or, you know, athletics. If, you know, it can be far-fetched about what they want to do, but I think the parents of the children that don't tell them that they can't or be careful, you might get hurt, or don't raise your expectations, I think the better parents are the ones that you know, just let time take care of itself. They may have their misgivings about how far their child may succeed in any endeavor, but I found the Calkins to be just wonderful parents as far as not setting limits for their children. And they, you know, they had three different children that swam for me and had varying different levels of commitment. But this kind of inner belief or drive or goal, you know, I don't know what you call it, but, you know, with Tracy, it was evident that she just wanted to be the best. Not bettering other people, but she just wanted, you know, to do, you know, she wanted to win, and it wasn't at all costs. She's a wonderful person to, you know, to be as an athlete, but at the same time, I think she had this desire to be the best. And early on in her career, I talked about the longevity of being a good swimmer, not just, you know, accomplishing something once and then, you know, we kind of looked at Johnny Weissmuller's total national titles as a, you know, as a goal for her to try to achieve. And, you know, she did that, and she not only just broke his record, but, you know, took a significant number beyond that, almost doubled the amount of national championships that he had won and held the record for a number of times.
Well, that was quite a landmark. And Coach Bergen, you mentioned, you know, what motivates them inside, and I guess my question for Coach Yetter is, you know, Katie talked about you really being motivating for her and bringing an energy to the pool deck all the time. So, Paul, what motivates you, or where do you draw your inspiration from?
For me, it's going to big meets. I'm always really psyched up after we come back from a big meet, and I haven't been around this game for that long. I've only gotten a chance to go to a few international meets, but every time I go, I come back feeling like I know where we should go and the direction the training needs to take. I just feel really psyched. I get to see some of the fastest swimming in the history of the world, and that's what motivates me to come back and try to, you know, coach our, really it's at this point at North Baltimore, it's mostly kids that are high school age kids, to try to get to that level. And so I think that's something that's really motivating for me. I mean, I remember at the Olympics watching Thorpe and Hoagie and Michael race the 200 free, and it was just an unbelievable experience to actually be there to witness that race and to feel that race. because for those of the for those people that were in the stands, you could actually feel that race rather than just see it. So that's something that I think about.
Mm-hmm. Coach Bergen, let's roll back the clock to the 1980 boycotted Olympics and the disappointment that followed the announcement. Coach, we're going to repost the speech you made to your team along with this interview on swingworldmagazine.com. But I want to share some excerpts of that speech now so that we can revisit some of the reasons you outlined as to why athletes compete. Do you both mind if I read some of those excerpts?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Coach Bergen, it was you were addressing, it was at the University of Texas, you were addressing the team on they didn't make the announcement that we were going to boycott it, but you kind of knew it was coming, and you talked to them about you know, the disappointment, but try to put everything in perspective. So I want to share that with our listeners here. You started the talk by quoting a person who said that fame is like a vapor and disappears really fast, but character is forever. You go on to tell the swimmers that prior to the boycott, some of you may have thought that you were doing something for some personal publicity or for a scholarship or a chance to get some recognition. Really, it is temporal, and that is not going to last a long time. You went on to relate a story about Don Havens, who was left standing on the starting block at the 1968 Olympic trials, thinking the guy next to him false started. Don was the favorite to go to Mexico after winning multiple national titles in years prior. This is what you said. He said, the starter pulled the trigger and let the race go. Don Havens stood up and looked at the starter, and everybody had gone. This was a guy who had won AU national titles several times. He hadn't been beaten in the 100-yard freestyle for five straight seasons. He dove in the water and ended up fourth in the heat. So he didn't get a chance to swim in the 100-meter freestyle in the finals at Belmont or in Mexico. 3 weeks later, he went to Chicago and set a world record. That wasn't beat in Mexico. And you think back to John T. Skinner, who wasn't allowed to swim in the Olympic Games in 1976. 2 weeks after the Olympic Games, he sets a world record that still lasts today. This was back in 1980. There are some real unfortunate things that are happening to athletes, so there's got to be something besides an Olympic medal that keeps them going. So my question as a coach today, you know, do you remember that speech or that talk?
Yeah, I did. It was tough because both between Eddie Reese and I and the women and the men at Texas and also the club, the Longhorn Club, I think we had, you know, eight kids that were ranked in the top three in the world and five that were ranked number one. So, you know, and this is something that, you know, these kids had put their schooling or their, you know, employment careers on hold to try to, you know, point for this Olympic Games, and then lo and behold, it was taken away from them. I don't know about Paul, but I had always placed a bit more recognition, I don't know, not recognition, but importance on a world record than a gold medal. I guess as stupid as that may sound, I felt if you did something in history that nobody had ever done in your particular event or specialty, that was a, you know, you were the best that ever was, and you were certainly the best, you know, that is. Whereas you can win a gold medal without setting a world record. It just depends on how good you are at that day, and it takes very special preparation and performance to accomplish that. But for me, I always thought that if you were trying for perfection, that it began at the world record. And, you know, that's, the clock is consistent no matter what country you're in and what pool you're in. So it was the one thing that I felt that, you know, I could keep with me as a coach and also with the athletes.
And Coach Paul Yetter, are you finding that a lot of athletes today are putting more emphasis on the ribbon and the medal and less on the record and the time?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm in the proper place to compare what athletes today are doing compared to what they were doing in the 70s. But I do think that the name of the game is to win, and I feel like, you know, when you're in a race, the name of the game is to win the race. And so I think that a lot of the athletes that I coach and that I see are really in to win the race, and you know, more along those lines. And then if the world record happens, it happens. Although I hear what Coach Bergen is saying. You can't be the world record in that sense.
Well, that would be true. And I just want to touch a little bit on goals and how important are goals both as a coach and those of an athlete. And let me even take a step further. You know, does a coach's personal goal impact an athlete's goal, and vice versa? Are there dangers in those mix? Coach Bergen, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think that's, you have to be pretty careful. I think, though, like Paul, working with mainly high school kids, most of my coaching is always done at the high school age level, and I think they're pretty moldable at that particular time in their career, and so I think the coach can act, maybe see potential that, you know, either the child or the parent doesn't see, and you can try to instill achievement, you know, certainly at an age group level, and then, you know, at a high school level or at, you know, at a national level. And so I think the coach can be pretty influential in, you know, kind of getting the ball rolling or planting the seed or whatever it is. And then if you have an athlete that has, you know, kind of the raw ingredients to do it, and the willingness and the desire to go after it, then, you know, then you become a kind of team in this scenario. The danger, of course, is, I think, probably pushing athletes beyond, you know, their desire to accomplish, which, I, you know, certainly I've been guilty of in my career.
Paul, do you have anything to add to that? Coach Yetter?
No, I think that, you know, what Kurt Bergen is saying is right on. I mean, you can't do it for the athlete, and they're the ones that have to have the desire to do it.
And what you're saying is, if coaches are pushing beyond what the athlete's goals are, in that, are those the seeds for burnout?
Are you asking me? I'm not sure, Brent. I feel like burnout is a word that's certainly overused, however you want to put it. I think that people get disenchanted with their certain, you know, athletic event, you know, whether it's swimming or any other endeavor, when they don't see themselves being as successful as they'd like to be. And I feel like, you know, a lot of times people get, you know, kind of depressed at that, and I think that there's a downward spiral that people go through when they lose their tenacity and their optimism for the sport.
And Coach Bergen, if you know, what causes burnout, if I could use that term again, and if somebody's in that spiral that Coach Yetter just referred to, have you seen anything, or can you do anything to pull them out of that?
Well, it's tough. You know, I don't know if Paul agrees, but it seems to be more prevalent when athletes are hitting plateaus, you know, or they're almost going slower or performing at a lower level than they once were. And I think if you can try as a coach to identify you know, what the causative factor is for not improving, then I think you stand a real good chance of re-energizing the whole process. I'm like Paul, I guess I'm a little leery of the word burnout, because to me, it almost assumes that, you know, you've burned so much energy that you know you've got nothing in the tank, and I'm not so sure that while it may be happening both psychologically and physically, I think it's a false truth. You know, maybe all you have, maybe the person, let's say, was swimming X level, say a girl at 13, 14, and all of a sudden at 16, her body's changed and she's gained, you know, 10 pounds more than she had before, and she's not any stronger, and the training is the same. Well, you know, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to realize it's going to be more difficult for her to continue to swim faster. You know, if you can address getting stronger to match her, you know, the weight gain, then I think you're on your road to improvement. But I don't know if it's so much burning this either mental or physical, you know, fuel storage that we have and burnout as much as, you know, just this kind of eroding away of enthusiasm for, you know, for doing what it takes to kind of break this cycle, this spiraling down cycle of apparent failure or lack of success that seems to be happening.
Well, I think
certainly there's a loss of control with that too, with that downward spiral, where if you can figure out what is happening with the athlete, then maybe you can regain a sense of control. And I think that a sense of control is always what can get people back up on their feet.
So what you're both saying is that it just needs a refocus, rededication, reevaluation, pull out those things that you can't be in control of and try to address those issues.
Sure.
Well, that's, to me, is right spot on.
Well, let's move on to another thing, Coach Bergen. Over the years, you've been quoted in Swimming World magazine as being a big proponent of integrating water polo in competitive swimming. What are your views now on the cross-training aspects of water polo and swimming?
Well, in my club team, I've always used water polo to kind of as a fun way in the fall of the year to get in shape for swimming. And you know, we've even had our club teams compete in the AAU, former AAU water polo competitions, especially the girls, and the boys in the high school water polo. I think that it's, to me, it's headed in the wrong direction currently. Who's the head of U.S. water polo? Is it Bruce?
No, Bruce Weigel is now at the International Swimming Hall of Fame as the executive director. They just announced a new...
Used to be, right, the head of U.S. water polo?
Yes, Bruce used to be, correct.
And he had this conversation with me because I was one of the few club coaches that was still saying, well, you know, it's okay, they're complimentary. And, you know, I had a few kids that, in fact, Tracy's sister didn't make a U.S. national team, but a couple of times as a swimmer, but was a starter for the U.S. women's water polo team in the World Championships, and yet she couldn't make it as a swimmer. I had another girl in Philadelphia that couldn't even make national cuts, but she was captain of the U.S. Women's water polo team. So I had liked it. The problem that I see is my son played at Santa Barbara. My younger son, he was a water polo player. My older son was just a swimmer. But the coach told me that he was getting guys in to college, freshman guys that were water polo players that were basically 49-second freestylers. And the California water polo was they would play polo through until December, and then the high school swimming would start. And the CIF was in May, I believe. And then in the summer, they'd do both. They'd swim club and play water polo. Well, since they've started spring water polo, it's been water polo almost year-round now. and the kids in the summer are just doing polo. They're not like Matt Biondi and even I think you know, Roy Sarri, and I'm trying to think, Don Scholander. I mean, they were doing both at a really high level. Well, now they're getting guys into high school or college water polo teams, and he can't get anybody that can break 51 seconds for 100. Mm. I think what's ending up happening is they're getting poorer and poorer swimmers in water polo. So I know in Oregon, where my son is coaching, it's like now I guess the kids would rather play polo year-round than swim, and I think it's hurting both sports, to be honest. We're losing some potentially good swimmers to water polo, and water polo is slowing down to the point where they're not getting very good swimmers. So, you know, I think it's really hurting both at this particular point. I don't know what, you know, Paul's experiences is in Baltimore, but that was mine and most recently in Oregon.
Well, our experience here in Baltimore is that water polo is not very big, and we don't really have a conflict right now. And I never really think about water polo, to be honest.
Just in concluding water polo, it just seems like water polo was, at one point in time, was just part of the preseason phase of year-round swimming and not necessarily a sport within itself. Now, I know Coach Bergen, you took it to another level, but do you think, Coach Bergen, that there is a place in the change in the whole environment of integrating, you know, some fun water polo within the competitive swimming environment?
Well, to be honest, I think that's where it should be. I think to start to get water polo players that are only water polo players, you know, in elementary school and below is going to be a complete disservice to water polo. You know, I think the kids, first of all, have to become good swimmers. They can do water polo for fun, but golly gee, if, you know, if a kid's having to make a choice instead of, you know, kind of doing both, I think that's where the danger lies. In fact, you know, my preference is to, once the athlete becomes college age, which is going to be the predominance of both the men's and women's team internationally in water polo, would be to have them not face those choices till they're in college.
Well, we'll see how things evolve over time.
Yeah, I guess so.
Coach Bergen, I want to move on to something that you said in 1976 issue of Swimming World magazine. In response to an article that was written saying that Olympic champions were born. This appeared, like I said, 1976, where you said, "Dear sir, conversely to Dr. Reinhardt's article, March Swimming World, Olympic champions born. Champions are created out of desire, which brings into focus all that an individual has by birthright, environment, or development." Do you remember that response in that particular article?
Yeah, I kind of felt like if that was true, we might as well just do a genetic test and, you know, 90% of us all go home, you know. But, you know, my experience was, and even though that was fairly early in my career, I felt it was too easy an answer to ruin everything for a lot of young people. It just seemed to me that, I don't know what Paul's experience is, but sometimes the most talented, quote, naturally gifted, talented kids have the worst work ethic in our teams. And it seems that there's a balancing act that happens. You know, the ones with sometimes the most desire and best work ethic have the least amount of talent, and, you know, vice versa. Fortunately for, you know, the very upper end of things, and I'm only talking maybe the top 2%, you get the talent and the desire to do the work, which, you know, certainly I think Tracy and Katie represent. But for the other 98%, I think, you know, the ones with a lot of talent can probably get by with a little less work and be successful, and the ones without that much talent with a lot of work can end up being pretty successful. So I think it's a pretty even mm-hmm. playing field.
Coach Bergen, let's just take it a step further. In light of your experience in the horse racing industry, where the bloodlines take precedent over most matters, at least to the general public, do you find that statement truer in horse racing, or you know, what similarities have you found being in the thoroughbred industry for a number of years that training horses have towards swimmers, if any?
Yeah, we'll talk about genetic predisposition. I mean, you know, how many zillions of dollars goes into, you know, pedigree research and trying to get the proper, you know, matches and breeding and, you know, and still you get down and a 120-to-1 shot ends up winning a derby, you know, so... You know, even there, I think the training has a tremendous impact. And in horse racing, there's this, quote, luck aspect that plays even a, you know, a greater part than it does in swimming. But, you know, still, even when you're getting over hundreds of years of genetic mating to get these exquisite racing machines, you can still get the, you know, the $12,000 horse winning a race that the $5 million horse couldn't win. So,
well, that's the coach. Coach, that's the horse Coach Yetter and I are looking for.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's the one that Bob Bowman's trying to breed for. So. anyway, getting back to that 76 comment, if you can't plan on that 100% in a thoroughbred industry, certainly in the human population where we haven't controlled the, you know, the genetics of individuals, you know, nearly as closely trying to pair up mating for athletic performance, I feel like commitment is a far greater and desire far greater commodities.
Well, I think that's kind of puts a great exclamation point to today's conversation. Paul, Coach Yetter, do you have anything that you'd like to talk about or anything you'd like to add to this conversation? And same to you, Coach Bergen.
No, I'm happy to be here, and I'm glad. Thanks for inviting me.
Brent, it's wonderful for you to one take on the role of the now controlling, I think, this wonderful media, Swimming World Magazine, and you know, I had found it when I was in the earlier parts of my career. I just couldn't wait for the issue to come out and look at that, how they train, because you know, like Paul, I was dealing with high school kids and pretty slow ones at that, but I always look at that, how they could train, and all of the kids on my club would, you know, hate it, because every time it came out, they knew I'd be trying to modify it down to their level of swimming and see how well they did with it. And then with this radio interview you're doing, I hope it it can add something to our sport and certainly the coaching community, which I hope, you know, can benefit from it. So thanks for doing that.
Well, it's my pleasure, and it's always great to talk with great coaches. Well, we'll leave it at that. This is Brent Rutemöller with Swimming World Radio, reporting on swimming from around the world. Thank you. Ooh, I hate it.